What are your thoughts on the kayak movement?
I love it.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Rather than start off with a little chit-chat, I'm going to introduce a special guest we have, and he agreed to do this. This is a guy I used to compete against at the club level. He was red hot then. He jumped from that when he was in his mid-20s into the Bassmaster Opens and narrowly missed qualifying for the Elite Series the first year. The second year, he got it done and came out swinging. So I'd like to give a warm welcome to our guest this week, Bassmaster Elite Series angler, Kyle Patrick. Welcome, Kyle.
Thanks for having me, guys. You know, I do all sorts of different podcasts, but I like especially doing podcasts with, you know, guys that know me before.
Yeah,
you know,
from back in the day.
Yeah, because it's just cool. Because, like, the first time I fished against you, was I in a Bass Tracker? Probably, like, a little or, like, no. Tiny little.
No, you had the Z7 with the 175 Merc and the power poles.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So that it's funny, like, how, especially in this sport, it goes in stages. Like, literally, yeah. I started bank and off the dock, and then, like, you kind of get that itch, and now, you know, I'm out in the canoe or whatever. I fished a couple tournaments in a freaking canoe.
This is better.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then, like, okay, now I'm fishing out of, like, a whaler, you know, like an old school, like, 17 or 16 foot little whaler. And then, oh, like, I'm going to buy this, whatever, $10,000, $8,000 Bass Tracker. And it just, like, slowly goes up from there. And it's amazing to see. Yeah, it's cool to see where I've, you know, and I don't forget that because it's I'm very fortunate to have
it grounds you.
Yeah. I'm fortunate to have what I have now in the sport. And frankly, thank goodness that I'm doing it for a living, because I don't know how you would be able to afford all the stuff that you need to really compete these days. You know, it's crazy, but also cool to see how far the sport's come,
especially in technology.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the controversy, I think what they're doing for the 2026 season, and I know you had an opinion on it. I heard that.
Yeah.
But then you...
I regressed. It's all about, for me, it's not about, I try at least, which a lot of anglers I can say don't. I try to make it not about myself, because all these anglers, their opinions on it are based on
how it affects them,
which is fair, because you're also a business as an angler at a professional level. But, you know, I had to take a step back. I talked to, you know, Dave Mercer. I talked to all, you know, everyone I could, just try to get a hold on why it happened. And look, I'm willing to give it a chance. At first I thought it was done for the wrong reasons. And I felt like it kind of devalued the sport a little bit, because the consistency has not been there. In bass fishing as a sport, I would like to see a little bit more consistency. Like, you have MLF changing the rules every 6 months.
Right.
You have, and you have all these changes going on, and 3 hours this, 2 hours that. The Toyota Series are thinking about making 3 hours of scope and the rest of the tournament without. How do you police these rules? We just saw.
Right. How do you police it?
How do you police these rules? So all of that being said, I think Bassmaster did what they needed to do. I think that it probably is a good move, at least to just kind of test the waters. And I'm looking forward to competing that way. Honestly, it's going to bring some excitement. I wish that the St. Lawrence River didn't have live scope. I would have loved to compete, because it's very different now when we go to New York. That's how I love it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about, and anybody that's not in the know about this, it's the ongoing controversy with LiveScope, forward-facing sonar, or as Tommy Sanders likes to call it, front-facing sonar.
Yes.
It's forward-facing sonar. Anyway, what the Bassmaster Elite Series did, in order to make it totally neutral and leave opinions out of it, they paired two venues. It's a 9 tournament season. They paired 4 groups of 2 venues, and they did a coin flip.
Yep.
And whichever way the coin went for the first one, it was the opposite for the other one. So half of them are with live sonar and half of them are without. And it was decided totally randomly by a coin flip. So half of them are going to have to be done old school 2D sonar, and 360 is allowed. Hummingbird 360.
This is where it gets. This is where I don't like. This is where I don't like this whole deal. Is this isn't a perfect world, and I think that's why it bothers me, the rules a little bit, because if you want to make this a sport and you want to have a totally fair playing field, you need to understand the reality of the situation, which is certain anglers are sponsored by companies that maybe don't have 360. Certain right. anglers are sponsored by companies that have better forward facing. Like, this right. is all stuff that I don't think was factored in necessarily. And I think a lot of it was based on money being involved. I don't know. This is where I thought this whole thing got complicated. And that's why I was a little bit against it at first. And I'm still unsure. Because what about the guys that are sponsored by Lowrance?
Right. They don't have 360.
They don't have 360s, and they can't put it on their boat, or else they lose a $25,000 a year sponsor plus their right. equipment. And now you're going, well, what do I do? Do I take the money and risk my performance? Or there's a lot of things people don't think about when they're like, oh, go 50-50 or ban it or whatever.
It would have been better if they said 2D sonar only.
I think it would have been better if they made us just use one mapping graph. I think that would have been way better if they were like, look, half of our tournaments are going to be like they were in the 50s. And then half of the tournaments are going to be like they were last year, 2025. Yeah. Like, that's how I would have wanted it to play out. All this like intermediate, oh, you can have this, but you can't have this. You can have that, but you can't have that. It gets so nitpicky, and it's the same sort of issue that you fall into with the DQs that we're having, where there's little tiny rule infractions everywhere and it's hard to police it and it gets all crazy. Now, I hope I'm wrong, but it feels like they're digging themselves into this hole of there's going to be sponsor issues. There's going to be certain anglers are going to be upset. You look at the two sides of the equation. It's almost like politics, like forward facing people, non-forward facing people. And now, you know, say I win a tournament that is on, you know, Logan, I think we're going to Lake Martin. So Lake or Logan Martin, wherever, Martin after Gunnersville has forward facing yeah. sonar. I win that one, but I finish 80th in the Gunnersville one. They're going to be like, well, you only won that one because it was scope tournament.
Right.
And there's a lot of complexity that goes into this that I don't think people have really thought through.
But again, this year, 2026, it will be a work in progress.
Yeah, it will be a work in progress.
And their plan is to reevaluate every year. So yep.
Now,
that's good.
You still have to catch the fish once you spot them on the scope, though. Finding yeah. them is one thing, but catching them is a whole nother level, right? I mean,
you're right about that. But the problem is that it's a technique that is guys have been able to get so dominant with that it can sometimes be, and I'm talking about both sides of the equation. Now I'm taking the anti-forward facing approach.
You grew up old school.
I always did. I was fishing the bank, like the bank. I never fished offshore. Everyone made fun right. of me because I was always on the bank, like the shallowest I could get.
Right.
So the other side of it is it's so dominant that I've lost that sort of, I haven't lost that style for me personally, but the younger generation has lost that style of fishing because you don't need it yeah. anymore because forward facing is so dominant.
Right.
Like you can forget about all the different techniques, and then that goes into lure sales and all that. So
were you were competing from shore? You were like wading out into the water and competing, or were you?
No, going down the bank, burning.
Like fishing the bank. Okay, got it.
And I'm casting at targets for people. So I'm sure some people.
I'm so stupid. I'm sorry.
No. It's okay because it's good if people are listening that don't understand like what that is. It's like basically, bass fishing can be a very target oriented and finesse like approach. Like accuracy matters. When I get up to right. when you get up to the bank, it's like it's almost athletic. When more athletic when you get shallow, because you have to like be, you know, pushing branches out of the way, making sure your cast is the perfect, you know,
skipping under docks,
skipping under bushes. I mean, I've had some crazy stories in New York about winning tournaments, like totally up, like literally putting your entire boat in a tree and then like just leaning as far over and dropping your jig down, like all that stuff. Yeah. And that's why I'm okay with the 50-50, because maybe it'll bring some of that back.
And you know how to catch them that way.
Yeah, and highlight, because look, if I can top 10 a tournament off the bank, I'm going to go out and live scope. But guess what? I'm excited to potentially showcase some of my skill on the bank on Fox, right?
Yeah. Like,
so that's why I'm open to it now.
Yep. Well, and we'll see how it goes. So it'll be interesting. And I'm just glad you're going to be out there, but nobody's happier than you are going to be out there, you know, doing this again.
Yeah.
So the first year you went into the Opens, you got really close to qualifying, correct?
Yeah, very
close. How much did you miss it by?
I mean,
it wasn't much.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you could point at one fish, probably a tournament type deal. Like if I had caught a 4-pounder in a certain tournament, it brings you up so many points that I would have made it. I think I finished 10th in the standings in AOI overall 9, and I think seventh or eighth.
So people that don't know, these Bassmaster Opens, these are open tournaments. You have co-anglers, but there's between all of them, and they don't all show up to every event. But I'd wager, I mean, these fields are
200, 175.
Yeah. Right.
Like small ones are like 160.
But there's probably 400 professional anglers hitting those trying to qualify.
Yeah.
They only take the top 9. Uh-huh. He finished 10th in points his first year, but he got in the second year.
Yeah, the second year was crazy too. I was the last guy in. Like, I remember, because I'm not that good in Florida, and that was the last tournament of the year, and I was like, oh boy, it's going to come down to this. And then I snuck in fishing shallow the whole time, which is cool.
But then,
what's the big difference fishing in Florida? Like, what if you say you're not good in Florida, what is it that like
the
trips
fish
you
are
up?
Really, really finicky there, because you get a cold front and they shut off.
And there's so many different patterns you can run. It's hard to get like dialed in on one. Like, the fish are different. Like, it's a southern strain.
What, the Florida strain, largemouth. Yeah, he grew up on northern strain, and there's a huge difference in their tolerances, specifically in their tolerances to the weather.
Yeah. So, and there's a lot of, especially on like Okeechobee and Harris Chain, if you're not really familiar with fishing those lakes, which is a lot of the time where they go, for Okeechobee, Harris Chain, St. John's River, the tidal Florida fisheries are like, oh my God, I got just stomped on this year. Thank God I had a really good comeback this year before this whole tick thing. But Florida fishing is just complicated because they're very bothered by simple weather changes, whereas New York bass are not, or like northern strain bass don't have that same. They have more of a tolerance to like fluctuations in pressure and temperature and all that.
So by his second year, this is a central New York guy, grew up in Cooperstown. He wins a tournament on Lake of the Ozarks.
That was cool. Yeah.
I would imagine I'm typical of all the club guys that used to compete against you. We follow you. And I saw Lake of the Ozarks. I'm like, yeah, Kyle, that's awesome. Yeah. You know, so thrilled for you because you were living your dream. And that, again, kept him up in the point standings where he finished high enough to qualify for the Elite Series. But it's a win and you're in with the Opens if you fish the full season, if you fish all the Opens.
For the Classic.
He got to fish the Bassmaster Classic. What, did you finish 7th?
Yeah.
I knew it was a high finish, you know. Almost made the top 5, his first Classic. I'm like, anybody who had any doubts from the club guys, and I knew how good you were, they're like, shut up, right? Put a big shut up out to everybody, because Kyle is the real deal. And I'm a huge fan. I do remember one tournament. Now, this club, now JD lives on
Goodyear
Lake.
I love Goodyear.
So do I.
Yeah.
And there's quality fish there. I didn't think the first time I fished with your club, they launched in the river. And I thought I had just discovered that Upper Susquehanna the year before and went, this is the best kept secret ever. And then half the field ran up the river. I'm like, get out of here. Of course, they all know about it.
Yeah.
Spots were crowded, so I ran out to the lake. I went, I bet nobody knows how good Silman's Cove is.
Yeah.
But, well, but one guy yeah. does. I pulled into Silman's Cove with like 2 hours left, and I told my partner, you know Tristan Bauer. I was fishing with Tristan. And I said, let's go hit the cove because we know what lives there. There was one guy in the cove. It was you in your Z7. Yeah. You had that trolling motor on high, you were buzzing that shoreline. I said, man, he's trying to hit all the spots before we get there. I said, don't worry about that. He's blowing through it so fast. We'll just go behind and pick up any he missed. But I'm guessing you had already been there, and it was picked over pretty good.
Yeah, that shallow stuff was definitely picked over good. I think
that is such a good area of that lake.
Oh, I love that place. You know, it's funny. I think that new canoe and kayak launch in there actually has made it worse because everyone who fishes out of a kayak or a canoe or whatever, they launch and they start just fishing right there. Man, I can remember some of my most fond tournament memories. And this is why I love this discussion, is just it brings me back to like just the
where you started.
And honestly, I don't think it gets any better. And I'll say that on stage at the Classic. It does not get any better than like a cold morning launching with Susquehanna, me and Jim O'Brien or whoever, just like cold, like freezing cold. You're running down Goodyear with the fog. I've had some sick, sick fish catches in Silliman's Cove. Like flip the jig in there and you just from 5 feet away, you see a boil and it's swimming right at the jig. And then the jig goes, dunk.
Here it comes.
Yeah. God, it's that's cool.
Good stuff. I'm sure you fished it in November when the water temp is like 40 degrees, 38.
I love that. I love it.
80 smallmouth a day.
Yeah.
If you hit it right. Yeah. And you know that. So
that is sick.
So
and
tell
people
us
don't like it though. You know that, right? Like it gets a bad rep with the guys that go there because it can be stingy and honestly, you could come in with 9 pounds. And did you see that record fish that was just caught there by Susquehanna? Was it last year? Did you
How
see
big?
That? It was a 750.
Good grief. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I didn't see it either.
Who caught that?
Oh man, I gotta look right now.
Was it during a tournament?
Yes, yeah. I feel like it was. Hold on.
We fished Onondaga and we had you were at that tournament. Tristan had caught one that was, I think, a 514.
Yep.
It might have been
Diana's got some big ones, man.
We got Lunker for the tournament, but we only had one other fish with it. And he was showing that fish to everybody before weigh-in. And you came over and you looked at it. He said, yeah, you got Lunker, definitely. You got a limit to go with it? We said, no, we only got one other fish to go with it. He said, oh, man, I feel bad for you. And I think you won that tournament. I'm not sure how bad you felt, but.
I'm trying to think.
And that bass held up right to the very last tournament, which was on Goodyear.
Yeah.
And we thought, you got Lunker for the year, and somebody caught a 6.5.
Yep. It happened this year, just now, right? I was looking at...
Well, they usually have that tournament in October, don't they?
They had an Onondaga one recently that was, I think, God, I forget what won it, but hold on. Now I'm trying to figure out the big fish. You got me all thinking about this big... I'm not going to be able to find it. Oh, look, I found a 10. Do you follow Susquehanna Bass's Facebook page?
I do. I look at it occasionally.
Yeah, I'm looking back and this is a good picture. Goodyear Lake. We had me and Jim at 1541 October 5th and we won. And second place was Bill and Scott with 1360. Anyway, that's not interesting to the people listening probably, but no, it's just fond memories of fishing that lake.
Yeah. There's good bags to be had there.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about your first year on the Elite Series. I think one of the first few tournaments, they fished Florida, then they went to Texas, Lake Fork.
Oh,
you had a top 10 finish, got a century belt. It's a four-day tournament for those who aren't familiar. Anything 100 pounds and over for 4 days, four, five bass limits, receives what's called a century belt. And they're not that easy to get, but Lake Fork, these guys hit it the perfect time. And what was your weight? You had, I know you got a century belt.
Yeah, I think I had something like 111, 112, something like that.
Okay. Yeah, you were way over the 100-pound mark.
Yeah, I'll look it up for you. Yeah, no, it was a really, like, I've never caught so many big bass in my entire life. Yeah, now, yeah, it was nuts. My first fish that I put in the live well, or not in the live well, but I weighed was a 990, literally third cast, blind casting a Senko. And it freaked me out. Like, it really freaked me out. I had 111 pounds, 14 ounces.
Okay. Is that 112?
Yep.
111, 14.
Yep. So, yeah, I think I had a 31, or no, I had a 32 pound bag.
Yep. Hit the dirty 30.
Yep. I think I had two, if I'm not mistaken. That was so cool. If anyone hasn't been to New York, you gotta go. Like, it is so sick. So I had 32 pounds day one of bass.
Jay.
Day two, I had 28.5.
Where did you place day one with 32 pounds?
10th. Day three, I had 30 pounds. That had me in sixth. And then day four, I didn't have as good. I had a horrible day four. I had 21 pounds, 9 ounces. And it fell me from, like, it took me from fifth to ninth in the tournament. Yep.
Still. An epic experience. What's it like for a Central New York guy to go there and take a top 10 on a monster factory like that?
Yeah, I didn't think I was gonna, because I've always sort of liked kind of grinder tournaments where it's a little harder.
Me too, because that's where I've done the best.
Yeah, that's sort of where I feel like I shine. And, you know, that's a whole nother thing. Like, going down south and having the technology that we do, I'm able to break down these bodies of water a lot faster. But yeah, the big fish thing, I guess I just didn't really think about it. And that's sort of part of, I think, what was my problem, was when there's big fish tournaments where you, like, have to keep up with a high mark, if you think like that and you try to, like, really swing for the fences, a lot of the times you're not going to make it. But I just always try to keep steady, like, because that's the name of the game, you know, when you're truly fishing professionally, is like just keeping on pace. Like, never, you know, you want to make cuts, you want to cash checks, you want to make top tens. You don't need to always go for that, like, hero or zero.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
Even as a professional, and with all the options and all the baits that you have on your boat and everything else, do you find yourself going back to the same, like, three that work no matter what you're doing?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Definitely, same. Huh?
We're not the only one.
What I will say is like, I find myself starting there, but, like, a lot of the time, especially now with technology, you know, I'm throwing some crazy stuff, but for the most part, you're looking at your minnow style baits, your stick baits, like Senkos, whatever, all the stick baits. And then basically there's three, there's worms and minnows, soft, and then hard baits is like crankbaits, jerk baits, like that. Like, just, that's, and then you, all different sorts of ways to rig them, but that's pretty much all you need. Spinner baits, you know.
You throwing a lot of chatter baits?
Yes, I do throw a lot of chatter baits. I'm a Thunder Cricket fan. The Strike Team Thunder Cricket. The Jackhammer.
They catch them.
Jackhammer's good too, obviously.
Jackhammer and Thunder Cricket, probably the two best ones out there.
Yeah.
So the Z-Man, the Z-Man's for chumps.
No. The Z-Man is the originator of the chatterbait.
Right.
That's the Jackhammer. Z-Man Jackhammer.
Is the Jackhammer.
Right.
Yeah.
I just keep on embarrassing myself this evening.
No, I like it. It's good. Sometimes listeners, like, don't, like, are just getting into bass fishing, and they may not know all this. And, like,
no,
like,
right.
No, that's me. I mean, I've only really taken bass fishing more seriously in the last year, basically, since starting this podcast with Roy. I'm a fly fisherman by identity. Like, I like to go, I like to hit the streams.
Yeah. You're good at.
But I have learned to enjoy bass fishing, and now I have, you know, 5 bait casters hanging from my ceiling, you know, in the other room. So
I love it.
But I learned them.
It's addicting, man.
It is.
You're going to get addicted to it. And it's funny, like, God, I can remember being so addicted to it, to, like, and I still am to a weird extent, but it's a little different being that it's my job.
Right.
Cause now I'm sort of like, right now I'm furious. Like, I don't want to be not fishing, but I just medically have to be because of this tick incident. But you find yourself being like, oh my God, I just came home from a 7 or 8 week stretch of straight fishing. Like, I don't want to go fishing. But then I'm like, oh my God, but I'm back home in New York and I get to go fish the Susquehanna tournament. I got to go. Like,
I got to go. I got to go. Yeah, so you're addicted.
This time now,
you got the business side of it too, which takes up just as much, if not more, time.
Yeah.
Because if you don't work the business side of it, you're not going to keep your sponsors.
So fishing burnout is a thing, though, for pros. You guys burn out.
100%. I do. I don't know how other people would say they don't. I do.
A lot of guys go deer hunting during the season.
Yeah.
Hackney's a big deer hunter. Denny Brower was a big deer hunter. Houston, too. I mean, Larry Nixon, all those guys. So who were some of your fishing heroes growing up? I know you like Hackney.
Hackney.
Big time.
Mike Anelli, you know, the main guys, like the guys that sort of were on the scene when you were growing up watching it. ESPN days, you know, yeah, I would say like the Hackneys, Fighter. That's getting closer to like the later 2000s, I guess. Hackney, Fighter, like mostly the shallow water guys that had personality. I liked that personality. And I think I don't see as much of it in this younger generation, which is fine. But I liked that like energy that Iaconelli and Hackney brought, even though they're different energies on the water. Right. I liked that. I liked having like a personality to watch along with an educational deal. I liked KVD too, but he just didn't. And look, I talked to KVD. He's a good dude. But he is all business. And now he's different because he's not. But back then it was less. It was like almost like corporate, like locking in.
Yeah.
Whereas Hackney was like, you know, he was business, but he was like, he had a really big personality.
Iaconelli, he came up against a lot of flack when he hit the scene because nobody had ever seen anybody act like that. And everybody thought it was an act, but it was genuine. That's who he is.
Yeah.
And like when he knew he had that classic one and he was just, you know, I can still see him clutching that Yamaha jersey. Never give up, kneeling on his boat. I got to go. And slamming rods down and just spazzing out because that's what he does when he's jacked up. Yeah. And people got offended by that because they thought it's just an act, but it wasn't. He wears his emotions on his sleeve and it was genuine. And people finally realized that. And you have a lot of those characteristics, but it's genuine with you because you're so passionate about what you do.
Yeah.
And there's nothing better than getting to do that.
I have to take a step back and remember that, at times where it gets tough or whatever, you're just like, all right, like it could be worse. You know,
is it ever not fun?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, the problem is people they only see, all right, guys, championships or semifinal Saturday, Kyle's in third or whatever, or fifth, or championship Sunday, Kyle's going for a century belt. That is the beauty of the, if you had only lived those moments, I guess they wouldn't be as good.
It's the beauty of the edit.
Yeah, exactly. Basically. And social media these days is just, it's all positive all the time. Like, look, I'm at Lake Fork and I'm catching giants every cast. And it's just sort of confusion that I think people fall under, and it's a problem. Like, I think it's an actual problem with, especially with younger kids that are on social media. They're like,
perfect. That's all they see. What a great job. What a great job. What they don't realize is that when they're watching Championship Sunday, they're watching 10 guys that have just killed them all week. What they don't realize is that there's 90 guys that already went home and 50 of them left a day earlier because they didn't get paid at all.
The reality of sponsors these days with some of these guys is now they're behind on, they can't pay their whatever. Like, it's not. It's
their
not.
Mortgage, their boat payment. Not everybody's running a free boat.
When you're out there on that final, on the championship Sunday or like leading up to it, do you have to like put yourself in a certain mindset so you don't even notice the cameras on you while you're out there?
Hey, if you want to find some good footage, okay, go to the, type in 2022 Chesapeake Bay Open final day. And it was the first time I ever had a live camera in my boat. And I was a disaster. Like an absolute disaster. I didn't know how to handle it because it was sort of that weird moment where I'm
on TV,
living that dream that I've always wanted, but I also kind of had to focus. So I blew it. Right. But then the next time I had a live camera,
is it a manned camera or is it?
No, there's a, they have got a guy there. Dude on Yeah.
Do they talk to you while you're doing it? Like, do you guys chat?
Like, hey, you're live. Tell us about what you're doing right now. Or, you know, the studio wants
that's
to know.
Gotta suck. How are you supposed to concentrate?
I really like it. I think the next time I had a camera was that Open that I won, I want to say. No. It was a different top 10, but yeah, it went really well. So to answer your question, it does take getting used to, but once you're used to it, I'm just, I don't even
it's whatever.
About it. Yeah.
Some people hate hearing their own voice.
I do. I've gotten used to it too, because of all the interviews I do or whatever, social media stuff. Like, I see myself and I'm like, I hate listening to my voice, but whatever.
You don't have a bad voice.
No, I appreciate
it. Not bad. You're not even mic'd up. You're going off your computer mic. I mean, you sound fine. You're good to go.
Yeah. So you had a second question.
How fast, I should say this, when you were just doing your, what year did you have your big win? When did you have your first big one that got you rolling into this whole part of your
2023.
And then in 23, how many Instagram followers were you sitting at?
Oh no, it doesn't go like that.
Because you jumped. Obviously, you're at like 50,000 now.
That's through my consistency in social media posts and kind of being funny, not so much serious, like doing different like skits and stuff. That's a slow overtime grind.
Like stepping out of the shower, wearing your Sentry belt.
The social media, I got a few more for sure. Don't get me wrong. I think social media followers comes mostly from the content that you're putting out. Like, are you putting out good?
And your personality. Content?
Yeah. Personality is a huge deal. Yeah. That's sort of what makes a social media page. And I've been slacking recently just because I've been kind of down and out, unable to do a bunch of stuff. But when I pick back up, I'm going to be doing a bunch of cool stuff next year that you guys will probably really like. You'll be able to watch me live like 24/7 when I'm on the water. I'll have like three or four different camera angles on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook. So I'm doing the full live coverage now.
Cool.
Myself, and the integration that you're going to see on my software is going to be pretty cool. Like, I think people are going to be like, holy smokes, that's legit.
What are your thoughts on the kayak movement?
I love it. I want as many people fishing and buying baits and electronics as possible. The kayak movement eventually goes to, I mean, maybe I don't really know the percentage, but I'd imagine at least half of the guys fishing in a kayak eventually dream about getting a bass boat, right? I would take a guess. I don't know. I think that's probably the goal, is like, hey, like, I'm going to, you know, run this kayak, try to get really good. And then maybe I'll save up, buy a mid-sized bass boat and try to compete. Like, that's what I miss. Like, I miss that. I miss that. I loved more than anything. And Caroline, my fiance, is in the room. She can attest to how much, like, it was a grind, but I just loved every minute of like trying to make all of it happen. And then once it happened, it was amazing. But then like that readjustment in your mindset, once everything's become a reality, like this year was the biggest sort of year for me to like really, like, after a bad first tournament, I'm like, the past 2 years have been like a blur, like the best thing ever. And now I'm here living it. I have fans. I have, you know, like, it's like it's a challenge to readjust your mindset as to, like, you know, basically have aspirations again, like I did with, I need to make the elites. I need to buy a new boat. I need to figure out how to buy a new boat to fish the opens. Like, those goals were like, I would have sacrificed everything. Like, literally, I mean, I've slept in trucks for weeks, you know, to make that happen.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that? Can you give me one story about living in the truck, trying to make that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I was on Alabama for an open, and I remember sleeping in a truck, and there was this giant tornado that was coming right at our campground. And I was actually sleeping in a tent, and we had to evacuate the campground, go to a hotel and go in, like, the hotel, like, let us in and go down under the lake. This was at Smith Lake. Okay. The lake rose like 8 to 12 feet in like 2 days. So the ramps were unusable. So the tournament ended up being canceled. Dang. But like, those moments are just so, I keep a special place up here in the noggin, like, thinking about those moments, because they're just fond memories. And that's why I do this, because it's so adventurous and you never know what's going to happen.
Do you still camp now, or do you always stay in hotels?
I can't camp anymore. First of all, I don't have the funds to invest right now in a giant camper to be comfortable. Biggest thing at these tournaments is, like, there's so much stress involved. people don't understand the stress that these guys,
right,
and including myself. I'm not sleeping in a tent on a hard ground. Like, we get an Airbnb, I split it. You know, it ends up being like not much. I mean, if it
were there, you got like three roommates on the series.
Yeah, right? We're there for 8 days. I bet it cost me $300-$400.
That's not bad.
No.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, and that's the way to do it. You're comfortable. You got your kitchen there. You're not. Because think about it. Like, one of the hardest things is eating healthy.
Yeah.
Because I'm traveling and I wake up at 4 a.m. I'm on the water at 5:15. I get off the water at 7:45, 8 o'clock. I'm like starving. 8 o'clock comes around. I'm like, oh, look at that Wendy's. I'm going to run into there and just stuff my face before I literally get off the water at 8 o'clock. I'm so tired. I'm asleep by 9:15. Wake up at 4 the next day. And that routine can go for like a month straight of like 9:30 in bed, wake up at 4:15. Every single day on the water, 10 plus hours on the water every day.
For like, eat, sleep, fish, repeat.
Yeah. Like legitimately, what people have on
in a loop.
Yeah. Like what people have on shirts, like eat, sleep, fish. That's all it is for like a month or two months.
And back to backs are brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And you have them now.
Yeah.
And they're all 4 day events. And well, they're weak. I mean, you get 3 days of pre fish and then hopefully 4 days of competition. Yeah. And if you're in the top 10, you miss a day of practice heading to the next venue, but you won. So it's, you know,
that
kind of takes the edge off.
It does. That's the other thing is like, luckily there's a lot of, there's just a lot that goes into it that people don't see, but I enjoy that back end stuff, like the figuring out your boat wraps, your sponsors, dealing with a little issues that arise, all the stuff. It's cool.
Yeah. Really. Whole different ball game from the earlier days.
Yeah, it is.
Club events.
It is. But that's why I love coming back doing the club events, because it's just like such a breath of fresh air. Yeah, I just miss that.
Basically low key events.
Yeah.
You still want to do well.
Yeah.
And so when you come back and fish these events, you run in your Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So what you got?
That's all I've got.
Yep.
Yep. I'm running the Phoenix.
But there's a lot of talent in the local clubs too.
Oh, 100%, man. There's some local New York guys that
there's some sticks.
Insane. Yeah.
Yep.
No doubt.
But they just never took the leap, you know?
Yeah, being a professional bass fisherman, it's a couple things. It's one, being really, really good, which I would bet you there are 10 guys, I would say 10 to 20 guys in the state of New York that could probably make it to the Elite Series. I think that's a fair number based on all the guys that I know that I think probably have a shot. I bet you there's 10 or probably 20. I'll give it 20 that if they made the leap, you know, I'd be like, any of them could make it, right?
But, and they would do well.
Yeah, and they do well. But a lot of it is like right place, right time financially. Like right now, I'm building a house. Like I don't know if I had tried to do what I did 3 years ago now, I don't know how how possible it would have been. You got to put a lot on the line because it's not cheap and you're not getting sponsored.
No, it's an expensive way to make a living.
Yeah. And so you just have to get kind of fortunate. And frankly, it's just like the PGA Tour. Like it's sort of like anything. Like if you fail 3, 4, 5 years in a row, the more you come back, it gets harder and harder because you're like, man, if you don't make it in the first year, 2 years, 3 years, even 4 years, unless you have unlimited backing, it's getting to the point where you're like, I need to take up a different career or I need to do something different. So that's why I think it's so hard is you have to put your career on hold.
Yep.
And
put everything into it. You got to go in 100%.
Your wife better be traveling with you or a very kind person, or if you don't have a girlfriend, all the better. I mean,
can I ask what your career was that you put on hold, or what your backup is if anything ever goes wrong?
While I was fishing Susquehanna and in college at Hobart, I basically ran tournaments in upstate New York for a short time there. I was getting involved and doing sales for Douglas Rods, a sponsor of mine. And so I was kind of like ingrained in the fishing industry just in case I didn't work out. I could be like, okay, you know, I'll make a solid living being a rep in the industry.
Yeah.
So like I had kind of, that was my secondary option in sales. I also did medical sales during the opens to cover my expenses that helped a lot.
I knew you did that.
Yep. So like that's the thing, you have to manage a job outside of it. And fortunately mine was easily manageable, or have a big time sponsor that just is like, yeah, I'll let you go 2 or 3 years. I'll give you 80 grand a year. Go ahead. I mean, some people find that and it's insane. It's crazy. Like, yeah.
Give me that much money to go fish.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll be back next year.
Yeah.
No kidding. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Yeah, no, this has been great. Appreciate you having me. I hopefully give some insight to people on what fishing's like and answer some questions. So,
do you ever jump on a podcast that's not that fun to record?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
100%. But then in the middle of it, like a lot of times, I'll get you know caught up in talking about fishing, which is always fun. But yeah, all the time.
I enjoyed the Mercer episode.
Did you? Okay, good. Yeah,
tremendously. And he's had you back. And I thought maybe they'd have you on as a commentator later in the season.
Yeah, know? They did. But I couldn't fly at that point.
Okay.
So I had to stay. Yeah, I did. They asked me about Champlain.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you were saying you would get too worked up watching it. And you can't take that risk.
I know. Now I'm feeling a lot better. A month from today, I go to a cardiac MRI, which they'll basically say, okay, you know, let's do a stress test and the scarring looks good or everything looks good. You can kind of ease back into doing whatever. I'm going to run a lot in the off season once they let me and work out because I want to get back into like some decent shape before I get back on the road.
What was the tick-borne illness you ended up catching?
Anaplasmosis.
Oh, geez.
Which that was fine, but it just got to the heart, screwed it up.
Right, and his heart enlarged
so big,
myocarditis.
Big. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. I had a slight case of that before. It's not fun.
Really?
It's I don't know if it's related, but I mean, shortly after I got the shot a couple years ago, I went in for a physical and they did my blood work. And then I got a call from the nurse.
Your opponent level was high.
Yeah, it was elevated. They were like,
yeah, mine was like so badly elevated. They like didn't. They were like freaking out.
What was your number?
Normal is like 10 to 15.
Right.
And mine was like 8,800.
Oh my god.
Oh, like ignorant level. Like ignorant. My fiance's friend is a nurse. She said she's never seen him that high. I had to let this go on for 2 days. I had chest pain. I actually was fishing on Sunday on Cross Lake and I caught 24 pounds or 23 pounds. And I told my buddy who I was fishing the tournament, I'm like, hey man, I have a weird like chest pain feeling right now. I'm like, just letting you know, just if something happens, I need you to do something. And he's like, okay, dude, like that's sketchy. I'm like, don't worry about it. I need to tell you that just in case something happens.
Right.
And then I fished the rest of the day. I felt kind of weird, but I'm like, all right. And then I get in the car. I'm fine. Sunday night, all was good. Went to bed. Monday morning, I woke up at 3 a.m. It was like 50,000 knives were being stabbed into my chest. I was stretching and I'm like, okay, this just is not a muscular thing. I got to go into the ER. So I drove myself to the ER and that's when they were like, yeah.
Yeah, that's scary.
They're like, you shouldn't even be alive.
Yeah. Well, I was having these arrhythmias that were like crazy. Like they attached me and like the machines were like beeping like crazy because my heart was like AFib or BFib or whatever. I don't know what it's good, but I was going nuts and I was freaking out. So they hit me with morphine and knocked me out because I was like, this is so scary.
So did they end up, so you missed last season? Is that what happened? You end up not?
No, I missed the last two tournaments this year.
Okay.
Yep.
But it's fine because I got my AOI average, which is really good. Yeah, which is really good. So what they did was when you take a medical exemption, if you fished more than 6 tournaments and you have a medical exemption, basically they extract you out of AOI and give you that where I'm standing. So
right. They hold that spot.
Yeah, I was in 22nd. So they just took me out, and my average is now for this year a 22nd. My average last year was a 16. So I have a 19 average, which is really important for requalification.
Yes, it is.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yep. Because they keep that average going, and you have to keep it up there to stay qualified. There were some big names who've been doing this for decades, like Mark Menendez and
at a certain point,
Jones.
Yeah, 100%. And at a certain point, I love Mark Menendez. I love Chad Pipkins. I love all those guys. But even Chad Pipkins admitted it. He's like, I got to get better. I got to reevaluate how I broke down this season and get better. And I think that's a big part of which confuses me. Everyone talks about like the sport. It's like, if it's a real sport, why are we letting these guys still that are on the Elite Series, they're finishing 80th in AOI every year, and they have this long history of AOI average that they're going off of.
Yep.
They're not getting cut, but then they're cutting some guy that's finishing 50th, but now he has one bad year, and he gets cut over the guy that's finishing 90th every year, but he's got a massive AOI backing. Yeah. I don't like that. I think it should be every 5 years, it resets or something, because you got to stay on top of your game.
Yeah, especially at that level.
Yeah, like go to the Opens. Go to the Opens. If you're not able to compete, and that day will come for me. And when that day comes, I will get up on social media and say, I am not good enough right now to fish on the Elite Series. So that's why I'm being cut. And people that aren't man enough to admit that, well, too bad. Like,
yeah, my hat's off to Chad Pipkins, too, for coming out and saying that. He was on the Elites for what, 13 straight years?
Yeah, yeah.
But the last few years, he's dropped off and it pulled his average down. And he said, I don't deserve to be here. And like he said, it takes a good man to come out and admit that.
Yeah, I agree. So
good for him. And he'll be back.
Oh, he'll be back.
He's good. He's a good dude. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on our podcast. We really appreciate it. It was good to catch up with you a little bit and talk about the old days.
Yeah, and no, it really was. Yeah.
Good people involved in that club. They're great anglers. And you made a big dent there.
Yeah, no doubt.
And you're making a big dent. I mean, averaging 19th for the first 2 years. No sophomore slump there. Congratulations on a great career. Yeah. And I can't wait for you to get back out there next year. But again, nobody wants that as bad as you. So stay healthy, get out there and go whack them and stack them.
Appreciate it. I'll catch up with you guys later.
All right. Thank you so much.
Great to meet you.
Good to meet you too.
Yeah. And as always, we will stay here episode after episode, occasionally having guests, and try to do our best to help you tap into your angler within.
We are one episode away from 50.
Cool. I've been wanting to check that, but cool.